and welcome to another episode of The Thing About Cars. I am Mickey Desai. Around the table we have Dave. Are you there?
I am here today.
And Ben?
I'm here.
And back at the mic with us again, the one, the only, Leanne Patterson. How are you, Leanne?
Just fine, Mickey. Nice to be back.
I'm glad you're back. Before I do a moment of Grand Trivia Auto, I had a safety thing that I think is kind of related to some of the winter driving that people are having to do these days. What kills me, though, is that, you know, by the time this episode hits publishing, we may be out of snowy weather season. But I read this line about a guy who was bragging about his raised Subaru and how having a lifted Subaru was helping him get around the snowy areas. And the comment I read was, four-wheel drive will get you going faster, but it won't stop you faster. And so I thought that was worth pondering for a minute. I think that's absolutely true. Anybody who thinks that they're lucky to have four-wheel drive because it gives them more get up and go is forgetting that they also have to stop. And the snow at that point doesn't care if you have four-wheel drive. So anyway, so yes, four-wheel drive does not stop you faster.
I'm not mistaken, Ben, you may know this better. In earlier cars, four-wheel drive and I think anti-skid brakes actually fought with each other. That the anti-skids didn't work as well if you were in four-wheel drive.
I'm really not sure about that. I haven't seen enough anecdotes either way to say. Although there were some early systems that I think sort of almost acted like their own anti-lock brakes if one wheel wasn't locking, the rest of them weren't, just because they were all connected. But that was back before fluid couplings and variable torque systems and all that.
That may be what I'm thinking of.
So, Grand Trivia Auto, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Grand Trivia Auto question for the day is very simply, how did Shell Oil get its name? How did they get their name? A, fellow named Ben von Schelp founded the Shell Oil in 1917. Schelp is the Dutch word for shell. B, Shell Oil sounded better than shale oil. C, in 1907, Shell Oil resulted from the merger of Southern Chemical Limited and Helpin NV, and so they made a portmanteau of Southern Chemical and Helpin, just becoming Shell. Or D, Shell Transport and Trading Company was founded in 1833 as a seashell importer. One of those is the right answer. We'll answer that at the end of the episode. And before we jump into Leanne's, let's just jump into Leanne's section.
You worked really hard at coming up A, B, C, and D.
I did, man. I was like, I confess, I did not work hard at all on that. I only provided one of those options. Our friend Tim Rogers, who's also been on the show a few times, Tim gave us that trivia question. So thank you to Tim for that. He was the one who surfaced that and probably came up with all the cool stuff. But
man, if you've been listening to the show recently, though, Mickey's been really stepping up his game in terms of obscure facts and weird questions.
Yes, that's true. Leanne, you're doing this really cool thing. I don't want to steal your thunder. Can you tell us about it?
I have joined Auburn University and their autonomous Tiger Racing team.
Oh, wow.
They are competing in what is now the Indy Autonomous Challenge. There's $1 million prize money on the line, and it's for the first collegiate team that can run 20 laps in autonomous race cars, all running first time ever head-to-head competition at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway famed Oval.
And the vehicles look way too cool.
Well, they're Indy Lights cars.
Yeah.
They're formal Indy Lights cars. They've made a few modifications. And Dallara has stepped up and made that possible for the teams to actually purchase those cars. Mm. And then Clemson University has done all the sensor input. So they're actually loading up those Indy Lights cars, the IRL-15 chassis, and loading it up with the geosatellite, the LIDARs, and all the different radars and sensors that you will need to make this autonomous car, cook.
Yeah. So basically, we're talking about an autonomous race. They're essentially engineers that are going to sit there and hit go. And then at this driverless race is going to happen at speeds in excess of 200 miles an hour.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah. So what's really interesting about this, it's all the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is one of the hosts. And of course, we all know the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was originally built as a test track. You know, the first race there in 1909 was motorcycles. 1911 was the first car. They used to have riding mechanics. I mean, it is the ultimate in test tracks here in the United States. And that's always with, you know, why it's been there. It's a proving ground. So for them to open up the facility to come in and be a proving ground once again, everybody thinks it's just really way cool.
Yeah.
But let me insist here, this is not about trying to create a driverless racing series. That is so not what this is about, because, you know, nobody's going to cheer for a pit wall sign or a car without a person in it. Right. So it's really about pushing the technology. This is one giant hackathon. And those are cool. And so you've got all these collegiate brains, because autonomous technology has been stuck. We are still really at 35 miles an hour. Yes, there's some that have gone faster, but California has now licensed, an autonomous vehicle to be a robo-taxi, and they can only go on roads with speed limits of no more than 35 miles an hour, and the car can't go more than 25 miles an hour. So that's really where we've been. 10 years, billions of dollars, millions of autonomous miles, and we are not any really farther along, because the car still can't figure out what happens when it gets to an intersection and it needs to turn left. And it doesn't know whether the car coming at it, it just doesn't have that human capability yet. So this is really about putting a whole lot of bright young minds into a problem that's been stalemated to see if we can push those boundaries.
So by turning left in rapid succession at 100 and something miles an hour, you're gonna lick that problem, right?
Well, more importantly, they figure that there are 30 teams that started this competition. There are 18 still in it. By the time we really get there, it'll probably be 12. I mean, some of them have already fallen out. There have been rounds of competition here. And, you know, white papers, passenger vehicles that had to do things. Then they're doing simulated races. And at the end of the day, this Indy Lights car, you have to be able to tell it what happens when somebody's beside it. What happens when it gets out of the draft of the thing in front of it? What happens when it's going to want to pass? So you're having to make human calculations at a very, very rapid pace. I mean, what you really want to do is program this car to think like Rick Mears or Joseph Newgarden or somebody like that, right? But if the car doesn't understand when it's got to push, that's a problem.
Right.
So if you can give it some of those human characteristics and get to the cars where they can move at those paces, with knowing that they've got to navigate 12 other cars on the track and not take each other out. And at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that's super, super challenging because of the speedway itself.
Say more about that. What about the speedway itself makes it so super challenging?
Okay. So an Indy Lights car or an Indy car, when you're bringing a rookie along at IndyCar, okay, let's just use that for an example. And you're going to get him over 210 miles an hour for the first time. He's then going to go to 212. And then he's going to go to 214, because every 2 miles an hour over that, that turn wall number one is coming at you that much faster, right? So you set the car up for, say, 215. You get the guy comfortable at 215. Then you have to set the car for 217, because a car set for 217 is going to feel like crap at 214. And you have to drive through that. You have to drive through the push, the pull, the uncertainty. It's just not going to feel solid under you. But at 217, it's going to be on rails. So the same thing is true for an Indy Lights car. Indy Lights cars really are set to be about 190 miles an hour. You know, they can encroach on the 200 mile an hour factor. But when I was running way back when, they were about 190 mile an hour car. Same things apply here. At 180 miles an hour, that car's going to feel like crap. And so if you've got an autonomous car that's moving through the numbers and gets stuck at 180 or 140 or 120, the car's going to feel like crap. At 190, it'll be on rails. So you have to set that car up for the speed that you're going to obtain. And the speedway is just really tricky. For instance, short story, Gary Bettenhausen was with our team 1 year, and he was helping coach Sam Schmidt and Scott Harrington. This is 1998. And it's a little damp of a day, and there's no activity on track because we don't run in the rain up there. And so they jumped into a rental car, and he spent 45 minutes doing laps around that track. And he would say things like, okay, guys, you know, this is the slip angle in one, but no, if you see that windsock go up about, 3 feet, that means the wind's come up by 10 miles an hour and your entry in turn one's going to move over by a foot. So it's that kind of track. You have to respect that track and you have to respect these cars.
Yeah.
One of the things we've talked about AI and autonomous vehicles on the show, a couple of other times. And one of the articles that I had read that stood out to me was that AI, what makes AI so limited is its inability to anticipate human behavior. In particular, the way the article was written is it said essentially that autonomous cars are too polite. And they had to figure out how to program kind of asinine.
A New Yorker behavior. In them?
Yeah.
Hey, bip, bip, bip.
My joke of this is like, okay, and this is really interesting, but I want to see it like handle Boston at 4 p.m.
You know, those are really good calls. Indianapolis Motor Speedway, turn one, 12 cars is going to simulate some of that. Mm-hmm. You've really got two thinkings going along. And mind you, not an engineer here. I have read enough to be dangerous. But it seems like there's a couple of schools of thumb where there's a whole bunch of sensors that get stacked and get used in an array of variety of things. And then there's some companies trying to do this machine-to-machine learning kind of in an end-to-end fashion. And what that means is somewhere over in Europe, they'll put a new autonomous car on track on the street, and it'll drive itself and it'll continue to learn. This is a stop sign I must do. This is this. And in 10 hours of that car, you've got a teenage driver. 100 hours in that car, now you have an adult driver because the car's been learning the whole time. Tesla would like their database to have all of the Tesla cars learning and punching that into their database. At the same time, there's some concerns with that end-to-end machine, learning. And I'm sure other engineers can elaborate on that. But there's a couple of different schools of thought, but there's certainly a lot of people in the space right now. You know, Uber has their company, Google has their company, Amazon has a company, Ford. Ford, by the way, has more autonomous patents than any other company in the world.
Really?
I thought that was a surprise to me. Mm. Tesla isn't even on the list.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really interesting how many companies are pursuing this. And then there's different levels of autonomous driving. Most of our cars are at a level 2, level 3, where they can tell you somebody's beside you. They can hit the brakes for you, those kind of things. If you've driven a Tesla autonomously or ridden in it, not driven, obviously, it goes around the corner kind of like it's hitting a stop, like bump, stop, bump, stop, bump, stop. It's very jetted. It's not really a smooth transaction. If you do that at the speedway, you're going to spin. The IndyCar can't handle that. So they've got to be able to smooth out those lines as well. So a lot of different things happening in that space, a lot of different companies. You can find articles on the best top 5 stocks if you want to support autonomous right now. So there's an awful lot happening in it.
So what role are you taking with the students or with the team?
Well, there's the role I can talk about and the role I won't talk about.
Okay.
I was a team owner and team manager in IndyCar. And, that's really those responsibilities are things that I'm trying to help the team with. You have a group of really wicked smart, students here. They're all on the graduate program level. And they're coders, though. They're computer guys. My job is to help eliminate any hurdles that they might find in running at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to help smooth that transition. From whether it's a technical standpoint, and that doesn't mean me being technical, but I know people that are technical. So helping them out from that standpoint, because we'll pick up a car on the Indy 500 weekend. That's when everybody, qualified teams, will pick up their cars during the Indy 500 weekend. And our cars are going to come back here to Auburn to do some testing here. The Italian team, there's an Italian team. By the way, Auburn, after 3 runs of competition, is sitting in the top 3 right now. So we're doing great. The first place team right now is an Italian team, and they have 45 masters, 35 PhD guys running it. They're bringing 40 people from Italy to Indy for the summer. They're booking all this test time, and they're currently first. But hey, we're only a tenth of a second behind them in lap time. So we're doing really, really well. But it's a matter of helping that team not only deal with some technical issues with the car, things that they might understand, because autonomous guys aren't shock guys. They're not mechanical guys. They're programmer guys.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions here. Is the test the programming or is the test the car itself? Because if they're taking, X number of identical cars and the only difference is the software, that's a different kind of competition.
Well, and the ESN group, which is the sanctioning body group, and again, anybody who wants to read more about this, www.indyautonomouschallenge.com. but you can go through and see they're trying to do everything they can to eliminate any hardware concerns or setup concerns so that everything's as equal as possible. So the competition's really about the software.
Right.
That's going to be super important. But at the end of, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Leon, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was going to say at the end of the day, not every team is going to obtain the same speed. I mean, some teams might get their stuff working at 120 miles an hour. Some might get it done at 150. Some people are like, there's no way they're going to get to 190. But the graduate students are like, hell yeah, we're getting there. We're going 200 miles an hour, right? So every team is going to have different achievements. And again, like we've talked about, setup has to be matching to the speed that you're going to achieve to make those cars work.
Sure.
Yeah.
So in the early days of my aviation career was when autopilots were getting completely rebuilt. And the advantage you had is you had a whole bunch of aerospace engineers who knew how to code that also went to learn how to fly aircraft.
Yeah.
And to translate that. So we don't talk about it, but I'm trained as an MD-88 pilot. No one in their right mind would ever get an MD-88 pilot to fly. But that experience, both in simulators and real aircraft, led you to be able to come down and try to code for the random variables you would see, right, vis-a-vis wind shear, wet runways, et cetera. Are there race simulators that you all are trying to work at? Oh, and have I stumbled on your secret part?
No, not quite.
Because now I'm picturing what your espionage role is.
Yeah, marketing, bringing the dollars. So simulation's really important, and they've already run one simulated race, and you can actually see some of that when you look up Indy Autonomous Challenge, and frankly, all the teams that are on LinkedIn posting stuff, you can see some clips from that simulation where they'll put two cars on the track with one, but not full field stuff. There's going to be another simulated race right in front of the 500, like the Thursday, I think, in front of the 500 before the qualified teams pick up their cars. Simulation's really important, but here's the fun part. Everybody thinks they can drive, right? I mean, hell, it's a car. I've driven fast. I've taken my, Camaro over at 95 miles an hour down the highway. So everybody thinks they've driven a car. We always laugh in the motorsports industry because, yeah, okay, that doesn't mean you can take an Indy Lights car at 180, 190 miles an hour. So a lot of people think they've been there, and we were talking with the students. I have to make sure I say students because occasionally I say kids and I have to put a cord in the swear jar. but we were talking to the students and like, how many of you been to the 500 before? Well, none of them have, but they've all been invited now to the 500 this year. And we're like, okay, we'll talk to you after that because this is going to radically change your world. Watching these cars, if you've never seen an IndyCar live, you have never seen IndyCar, period. If you've never seen them run, even at Barber Motorsports Park or Long Beach or any of that kind of stuff, television cannot capture it, and particularly at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So when they go down into turn one and they watch that car come through all squatted down and on rails, then it's going to change their world. It's going to change their world.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
So what can we invite our listeners to do? How do they check out the project? How do they get involved? How do they help you find sponsorships, et cetera, et cetera?
So the cool thing about this is, again, it's a collegiate deal, right? So these are all collegiate teams. And from a corporate standpoint, what we really get to do, Auburn also has a purpose-built autonomous research lab. We actually have a track down here, believe it or not. 1.7 mile, kind of shaped like Martinsville, got some banking like the Speedway.
Wow.
And they already do a lot of truck testing and passenger car kind of stuff. And there's a couple other colleges that have that too. We know that Michigan's up there in the Detroit world is just layered up and stuff like that. So the colleges have these kind of things. So the Indy Autonomous Challenge helps corporations understand that these opportunities exist. It gives them an opportunity to interface with the colleges and then think about what they can do, not just with this challenge, but beyond. Research projects, recruitment for the best and the brightest minds, internships, all those kind of things that when you partner with a college, that those things become available. So all those kind of things are nice. From just a straight branding opportunity, the cool thing is the branding opportunity for this does include the Indy 500. The teams are going to pick up their cars. We're going to be located in the old Formula One garages, which is underneath the grandstands on the inside, down near Turn One. They're going to be stationed there, and that's accessible for the fans. So all the fans will be able to, you know, come up and really get a look at these cars and kind of have that exposure to it, which is nice for us. So the Indy 500 branding from a social media, things in the media center, stories, articles, newspapers. I can tell you that any of the social medias for this challenge have already exploded off the map. There's so much interest in it. So just to tap into that from an opportunity is important and an opportunity to do it, because at the end of the day, this is not only about pushing the technology, but it's about building consumer confidence. I mean, we all remember, no, we don't, but some of us do. They used to have elevator operators. Oh, yeah. And nobody would get on an elevator without somebody saying, floors, please. And then when they got off, nobody wanted to get on the elevators. And there was a period where nobody would ride on them. And they finally put in some soothing music, lovely elevator music, and a big red stop button. And then everybody got on them again. You're going to see that happen to in autonomous cars, whether that's 5 years, 10 years, or 20. But eventually that's going to happen.
As long as I don't have to listen to any muzak of Love in an Elevator by Aerosmith whenever I get into an actual car, I'll be happy.
I've always maintained, you know, cars are piping sound out of themselves anyway. Why make it a V8? Why not make it Def Leppard?
Thank you.
Make it anything you want. But if anybody wants to get involved, certainly maybe through your pages, Mickey, mm-hmm. They can reach out to you and you can get them my information, that kind of thing.
All right. Cool. So. I think it's a fascinating project, and I can't wait to see the results. And especially the footage. I don't know if spectators are allowed at this sort of thing, but I think it would be cool to witness.
I think the Speedway lives and thrives by fans. Yeah. So I'm sure that I would have to believe fans are going to be allowed. The race itself is October 23rd. It's next fall. There will be a weekend where they do have to qualify, just like IndyCar, single car qualifying. And then there'll be a race with the cars, you know, all live. And they've decided to put a cap over the cockpit, because it would be freaking weird if it were just empty cockpits driving around, right? So I'm thinking that somehow or another, our cockpit needs to look like our mascot, Abby is driving the car.
That's hilarious. That's right. Wrap him in there.
Be great. That's it. So
that's cool. Well, thank you.
It could be like Tesla. You could put a mannequin in it and have it go around.
But interestingly enough, the rules say no animals can be on board. Fun stuff.
Why would they specify that?
You know, engineers wrote the rules. I can tell you that the lights people, the technical people, really haven't gotten involved in that rule writing. They will eventually when it gets closer to it. But right now, some coders have written it. Maybe they're just great sense of humor. So
being an engineer, it makes perfect sense to me. They would write that rule
perfectly.
That and
no raccoons.
No raccoons.
Yeah. If you've ever seen any kind of caution about use warning on any product and thought to yourself that sounds utterly ridiculous, you know that that's the result of somebody actually doing that. So
that's right.
Yeah, you might edit this, but somebody once said, "Preparation H, honey, let's try that on a cracker." And the back says, "This is not edible." I think James Gregory comic did that joke. Yeah. Always resonated with me.
Oh, unbelievable. Of course, I'm reminded of another bit of humor that has nothing to do with cars, but would you ever wonder what happened to preparations A through G?
That's a good question that I don't want to answer.
We don't want to answer.
When I was in doing stand-up, one of the comedians I performed with, we were in Cincinnati, which is the headquarters of Procter & Gamble. And they said, other news today, 10 dead bodies had been unearthed at Procter & Gamble headquarters. And all that said was on the toe tags was Crest Test 1956.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Leanne, for the
catch
up on that. I can't wait to hear more about it. I've got just a couple things to go over before we wrap this episode, because it is sort of a special weekend for us. I read this other thing that says, and this is a rant that I've had before, which is if a policeman can see my face, my identifying information, my social security number, and maybe even my blood type on a computer screen, then I should not get into trouble if I forgot my wallet and I don't have my license on me. If they can get all that information, just by running my plate, then who cares if I don't have proof of insurance and my license in my car? And I know Georgia's trying to change some of those laws, or they had changed some of those laws so that you no longer have proof of insurance in your car, but it just seems to me like if you can get the information, does it matter if I have that piece of plastic in my wallet at the time? I think the answer should be no.
Well, it kind of begs the question of verifying that that is actually you in the car.
That would be a license, but not necessarily a registration.
Right. But a computer, you know, record could also include an image. I mean, the image that's on my license isn't high res anyway. So,
of course, for that matter, they can just skip the part of coming and talking to you and just ticket you remotely as well.
which does
yes,
happen.
Yes, they can.
Which it does happen in some communities.
At red lights, yeah.
I mean, why bother to take the risk of seeing what they're getting out of their glove compartment? Nah, just give them a ticket. Be good.
Just give them a ticket, yeah.
Well, I know
I'm sorry, Ben, go ahead.
Well, I know that insurance cards are already going by the wayside, at least as far as carrying them, because I know Georgia's got a database for that already. And I think I have not had to actually show an insurance card at any time, not even, you know, at the registration office for some years.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely connected. And when you do something with your insurance, they send you a note right away. You've canceled your insurance. What's happened to your car? Is it in the state? Did you sell it? Did you, you know, blow it up? I mean, they want to know.
In fact, Georgia's database caught an error with a motorcycle I used to have that Texas didn't catch for several years that I lived there with that bike, that the insurance company had one digit of the VIN wrong. And Texas never had a problem with it, but when it went through Georgia, when I moved here, they kept saying, huh, this doesn't exist. And it took some phone calls to straighten out.
But Mickey, you've hit on one of my pet peeves is the amount of things we have to carry in our wallet, especially now that phone technology has been so advanced. You know, now, middle because of the pandemic, I'm not driving nearly like I used to anymore.
Right.
And so 90% of the time I'm living with my license and a credit card attached to the back of my phone. Until I get in the car, and then all of a sudden I got to put a wallet in, and I never realized before what an uncomfortable amount of weight I'm carrying around on my hip.
Part of me just wants to say first world problems, but on the other hand, you're right. Can't we just eliminate all this stuff or make it, you know, completely minimal? But they can put it in an app for that matter. I mean, there's, appify the whole thing.
Anyway. All that makes it hackable.
Right, yeah, that is true. That is very true.
And I've always sure. If somebody wants to hack my Kroger rewards card, you know, so be it.
But, you know, those gas points might add up to something there. That's
you add up.
Yeah.
Actually, right. they really do, because we spend an inordinate amount of money at Kroger.
Anyway, you know, small pet peeve or small rant of mine that doesn't have any convenient answers, and I just, you know, the whole legality of it. It's like, can we just do away with the actual requirement for a piece of paper and a piece of plastic?
But do you feel better now that you've got it out on the table?
No, not really. I've got
kind of missing the point of Mickey grinds his gears. You know, it's supposed to be help you find peace and centeredness.
There's no catharsis with this one, unfortunately.
Well, Chris, driving without a license in your pocket, I did maybe not the ultimate feat of that, but I certainly did a pretty daring one once when I drove. How far was it? Columbus, Georgia to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, 100 something miles, on a suspended license.
Whoa,
you're a risk taker.
it was worth it. I won't tell the whole sordid story, but it involved my brother pissing me off and, you know, me needing to get home. So
and maybe this is part of the sordid story you don't want to tell, but I feel compelled to ask, how did you get a suspended license?
Speeding tickets.
Oh, okay. That's easy enough.
Yeah. Having an older brother, that story makes perfect sense to me. I could write it.
Yeah. Well, he was the younger one, but
it's the dynamic of brothers that my brother's daughter has two sons and they're like 4 and 5. And the other day she was very frustrated and went online and said, at what point do brothers stop fighting? Like 55 years, I haven't seen that point.
It doesn't ever stop. So the reason I'm not feeling well, or I'm feeling a little bit better about one bit of news, I'm still stressed out overall, but it's like, okay, this one thing I had read just made me completely despondent. I felt like my personal dreams had been crushed when I first read a headline that said Stellantis was going to disband the SRT team. You know what I'm talking about?
Leanne's vaguely.
Yeah. So Stellantis bought Chrysler and Dodge. And then I saw a headline that said that they were nixing the SRT performance division, you know, from the Dodge lines. And there's a part of me that just went to bed that night just despondent. I'm like, this is crushing my dreams of ever really owning a souped up Mopar that, you know, comes from the factory that way. And not that I'm, you know, a Mopar devotee or anything like that, but it's just, it was just disappointing to read that headline. And the thing that made me feel a little bit better was the clarification that later came out on Motor Trend that said, yes, technically the street and racing technology division no longer exists as a small dedicated engineering team, but those engineers are being retained and folded into the Stellantis global engineering division, which will continue to make SRT and performance branded cars in the future. They're still doing the same work. It's only organizational restructuring. So that made me feel at least a little bit better. But for a minute there, I was like, crap, no more Hellcat, no more Demon, no more six pack. No, you know, what the heck?
You know, the when Fiat bought Dodge and Mopar, they put out a press release for the Hemi shootout cars, you know, the LO23, BO29 cars at the track that, you know, started it all. You know, that thing got a Hemi in it, get her done. But they were going to take out first off the word Hemi and just call it a 5.0, get her done. It doesn't have the same ring to it, right? Yeah. And then they put out a press release about the Hemi shootout challenge. They were going to redo it. They were going to, you know, stick to it and keep the Hemi challenge money at the U.S. Nationals coming, which is like a $10,000 payout. So not a lot in their world, right?
Right.
They made the statement from the head of Fiat that these are our people, you know, because they buy a lot of parts. And I had to laugh because no parts on any of those cars get from Mopar at all. They weren't even making an engine block for them at that time.
Right.
So they really just didn't understand their marketing. They didn't understand that these guys were actually just ambassadors to the brand.
Right.
And how passionate they were. They just thought, oh, they buy a lot of parts. And I thought, okay, you've clearly missed the whole Americana,
right,
you know, muscle car, you know, stack here. So,
or maybe they just saw the nail and the only thing they had was a hammer.
Well, so, while we're on the topic, can we discuss the brand Stellantis?
Stellantis.
Because I honest to God think this sounds more like a Pfizer product than a
product. Yeah.
I thought it was like a, you know, a clinical make your head better kind of thing.
Yes. Ask your doctor if Stellantis is right for you.
That's right.
Side effects include
the hair loss,
road rash,
drooling.
So I'm looking at the website, and it wants me to accept all their cookies, which always pisses me off. Am I going to have to censor the word piss?
Yeah, because you don't get calories with those.
Right. So, you know, they have a bunch of brands under their umbrella, but I don't see anything that says, you know, here's how you look at an actual Stellantis car. Nothing's branded a Stellantis car. And under the brands that they sell are Fiat, Abarth, Chrysler, Citroën, Dodge, DS, more Fiat, Jeep, Lancia, Maserati, Opel, Peugeot, Ram, Vauxhall, and Lesus. Lesus and Freedom Move are, I guess, ride-sharing options that they try to wrangle, but I don't see anything that's an actual Stellantis-branded car.
No, that name is just the corporate ownership group, you know.
Right.
Mm.
That's right.
It is not as bad a branding as Truist is, but it's close.
It's ranking right up there.
Yeah.
It's Stellantis, should come
with what other company can we piss off in this episode?
Well, maybe we should wrap and try not to piss off Shell Oil with the Grand Trivia Auto question.
I suppose so, yeah.
Let's wrap. Our Grand Trivia Auto question for the day is, how did Shell Oil get its name? Was answer number one. Well, let me go in order because they're sort of alphabetical at this point. So first option, Ben von Schelp founded Shell Oil in 1917. Schelp is the Dutch word for shell. B is Shell Oil sounded better than shale oil. C is in 1907, Shell Oil resulted from the merger of Southern Chemical Limited and Helpen NV. And they made a portmanteau of the two names, Southern and Helpen. And D was Shell Transport and Trading Company was founded in 1833 as a seashell importer. Leanne is our guest. Do you want to make the first guess?
I'm going to go with D.
The Shell seashell importer?
Yeah. I just like it because I have no idea.
It's been a long time since I've collected seashells. Ben, what do you think?
Oh, geez, I'm really tossed up on some of these. I think three of them sound really plausible. So, if I had to pick one of the three, I don't know. I think I'll just go with a portmanteau because that's a cool word.
So shell is a combined name of Southern Chemical and Helpin. Got it. Dave, how about you?
Yeah, it's because the company's name is Royal Dutch Shell. Having worked in Amsterdam a lot of my career, my instinct is to say it's the portmanteau. But Royal Dutch Shell, then that's got to be a portmanteau of like 9 or 10 words, many of which in Dutch are just going to involve guttural sounds.
Right.
The hell with it. I'm throwing in with Ben on this one.
You're throwing with Ben. Okay, so the real answer, Tim Rogers is going to be pleased to know that he actually stumped Ben and Dave and that Leanne got it right. Shell Oil Company was founded in 1833 as a seashell importer.
So,
yeah. If it had been anything other with names, the logo would never have made it to a shell.
Right.
And that's one of the ones I thought was plausible.
Yeah, really, because I'm saying, why would you need to import seashells? What are you going to do with them?
Well, because all over the South, crushed seashell was road. It was asphalt.
That's true.
It was asphalt.
It was road. It was mortar. It was, you know, the concrete base. There
were shells were used in a bunch of things. Shells were used to make buttons out of and for clothing and things like that. Ben, which was the one that was not plausible to you?
Because shale oil wasn't really a thing back then.
That's correct. That's the one that I made up for this question.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Sounds totally implausible. It's got Mickey's fingerprints all over it.
We all figured that one out pretty quick.
So thanks, you guys. Thanks, Leanne, for coming back for this session.
You're welcome.
We'll certainly look forward to the next one. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Please, if you have a good time with us, rate us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you find the show. We appreciate your help in improving our ratings that way. And I hope you guys are all staying safe and sane out there. Remember, four-wheel drive doesn't help you stop any faster. And we'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care.
See you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.